to the Mouth of the Time podcast, brought to you by the Shields Gazette. I'm Dominic Skerr, joined as ever by Miles Stafford and Joe Buck to discuss all things Newcastle United. No game for Newcastle United this weekend. They're out in Dubai in a warm weather training camp, but did play last Thursday. 1-0 defeat at Goodison Park against Everton. Late defeat again. Miles, we were at the game. What did you think of that defeat? Back-to-back defeats now for Newcastle.
Well, I think it was much like the Chelsea game in the sense that they left the field knowing they didn't deserve to lose. That said, they didn't do nearly enough in the second half. Very good first half. I thought they controlled the game through Guimaraes in midfield. Did very well. Then we had that long stoppage at the start of the second half. We had the protester tied to the goalpost. They didn't seem the same after that. Everton played with much more intensity. The crowd got behind them. It was a big game for Newcastle, but it was a much bigger game for Everton, and that showed in that last period, that second half. And I think all game, as much as we talked about controlling midfield, they didn't really do enough in the final third of the pitch. Things weren't quite joined up in that area of the pitch, and that's something Eddie Howe touched on after the game. But frustrating, because I haven't said that. I don't think they necessarily deserve to lose. And let's not forget, it was a 99th minute goal that did it for Everton.
Yeah, it's the latest goal scored in the Premier League this season. A bit of a sucker punch considering there was the red card for Everton earlier in the game, the 83rd minute, I think it was, Alan sent off. And Joe, you were also at the game in the way end. What did you make of the whole atmosphere building around the game? Like Miles said, it was a really important game for Everton, but also a chance for Newcastle to move well clear, 12 points clear, the relegation zone that they failed to take. So what were your feelings on the atmosphere, and what were your feelings sort of leaving the ground after the disappointment of the result?
Yeah, it was a fantastic atmosphere in the way end. You will have heard it, you know, people watching on TV would have heard it. It was one of the best this season. But in sort of Goodison Park with the home fans, I think you could tell there was a bit of nervousness. It sort of reminded me about sort of when Newcastle back in their relegation seasons, or even in previous seasons before the takeover, they wanted to get behind the team and there wasn't willing, but you could sense it as soon as a pass went wrong or, you know, something like that happened, that they were not getting on their backs just yet, but you could see the nervousness in it. And there was a couple of times where the home crowd seemed to get up and seemed to lift, but then that was quickly stopped by, as Miles said, you know, Newcastle did control the game for large parts of it, especially in that first half. But it was a real kick at the end of that game with the goal. I think coming off the Chelsea one, I was just in shock. I just stood there in silence, as did Morsi. When fair, it was just like, we can't believe this has happened again, because it didn't look like happening. Everton didn't look like scoring, I don't think. It was just one little lapse of concentration. But yeah, to have two of them in a row, it's a bit of a kick in the teeth, but I'm sure they'll learn from it.
Yeah, it's probably just a case of not quite doing enough to win the game. In the final third, like Miles said, just a bit lacking for all the possession they had in the game. But like I say, the second game running, there's been a bit of contention surrounding VAR. Alan sent off in the 83rd minute for a challenge on Alan Saint-Maximin. Initially given a yellow card, then it went to a red card following a VAR check. Miles, what were your thoughts on that? Because second game running, VAR sort of took centre stage to a degree.
I think Everton can feel hard done by, really. I thought it was a harsh red, like a strong yellow card, certainly. But obviously they looked through all the criteria for a red, and it's fulfilled those criteria. But your instinct is it was harsh. But it doesn't take away from the fact they didn't do enough after that. They didn't take advantage of that man advantage, which was another frustration to the game. They didn't really press home that advantage in that final 20 odd minutes, really, when you factor in the added time.
Yeah, and VAR, it's an interesting one, hotly debated. Joe, just in general, do you think VAR is serving its purpose correctly at all, or where do you stand on VAR?
I think personally for offsides, I know there's been a lot of debate about offside, but for me, I think it works well in that, because I think it's clearly, you know, you're offside or onside. I know that there's the whole thicker lines debate and all that, but where it annoys a lot of fans is the inconsistencies from, you know, one week, not even one week to another, really, in games sometimes. And I think it's if I think you should base it on the referee's decision and only overturn it if there's a, you know, a real error, you know, sort of wrong, as it's when it meant being there for either wrong red cards or, you know, game changing decisions. But I do think the Everton one was a red card, but also that wasn't more of a red card than the Murphy penalty was, if that makes sense. For me, I don't think that should have been overturned if the Murphy penalty wasn't. So I think it's just a lot of inconsistencies that they need ironing out. But I also think there probably needs to be a bit more from the referees. There needs to be, you know, we'll probably touch on Isaac Hayden's comments, but his comments after the referees sort of when they make the decision and after games, you never hear from them again. But I think that there should be some sort of explanation on these things, because it is every week we're talking about VAR and it's gone in our favour this week and yet we're still talking about it.
Yeah, it's the semantics over what is a clear and obvious error, because I agree with Miles in the fact that the referee made a decision, gave the player, Alan, a yellow card, and I don't think it was so obviously a red card that VAR needed to intervene. If he'd given a red card, okay, you couldn't have had any real complaints, but the fact he's made a decision, a bit like Kai Havertz with his elbow on Dan Byrne, the referee punished the player in the form of a yellow card, but it's one of them. And in terms of moving on now, like Joe alluded to, Miles, Isaac Hayden's been charged by the FA for improper conduct. That 12th man tweet, are you surprised he's been charged in relation to that Chelsea game?
I'm not surprised at all he's been charged, really. I know, you know, I've seen the reaction online to this. There's a lot of fans saying, well, he's right. And we all left Stamford Bridge, you know, unhappy with certainly those two decisions. Mm. But if you're a player and you question the integrity of a match official, you're going to get charged. And that was the subtext, or, you know, to that tweet. So I don't think Isaac Hayden can have too many complaints, and he wouldn't. He, you know, he's an intelligent player. He knows that he was making a point and he made it. But I guess the surprise is that the tweet hasn't yet been deleted, or certainly hadn't been last time I checked.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it's a point he made which we probably all agree with to an extent, but it's calling into question the official's integrity, which I guess. Guess you can't do. Saying he's a 12th man, implying he was basically on Chelsea's side, is grounds for punishment, and decisions now being made. But now Newcastle, like I say, without a game this week. Next game's on the 3rd of April at Tottenham. Currently in Dubai training. First day training today. Eddie Howe's spoken to the club website about that, state of our facilities in Dubai. Does this training camp come at a good time, Miles?
I think so. We've had an intense run of games, the last which was 3 away games in 8 days. I think it has come at a good time. I know we've had these kind of 2-3 week breaks at awkward times on back of defeats, but this didn't feel awkward. You know, I know in the past you've gone into a long break and an international break on the back of the feet, and you've got like 2 or more weeks to stew in it. It's not, I don't get that sense or that feeling now. I think it's come at the right time to rest and recharge and start planning for the Tottenham game. Cause let's be honest, there wasn't much time for preparation for those last few away games. There was a very quick turnaround. And this makes sense to me that he's taking the team out there.
Yeah. And what do you think the approach will be to this training camp? Obviously, Howe hasn't gave an awful lot away when you asked him in the press conference, things like that, given it's coming on the back of consecutive defeats.
Well, I've just listened to his interview and he spoke about giving the players a bit of time off, which they've had, and now they'll get to work. I think they'll just be doing what they would do in a normal week at the training ground. They'll be working on specific things. They've got the time, which is the beauty of it, to do a lot more work and in certain areas. I'm sure if we were out there, we'd see them working in the final third of the pitch, where they can improve there. And then they've got the full week next week to really get into some match-specific stuff ahead of Tottenham.
Yeah, and Joe, we've seen Callum Wilson out in light training over in Dubai. Just how big a boost is that to see him back involved? Kieran Trippier is also out there as well. And Federico Fernandez, who's been out injured recently, training fully. So how big a boost is it to see those players out there at the moment?
Absolutely, it's huge. I mean, you know, we haven't sort of missed Callum Wilson too much over the last few months, luckily. I think, you know, the signing Chris Wood was massive, but just to have Wilson back and in competition with either Chris Wood or even to play alongside Chris Wood would be massive going into them last few games. You know, touch Wood, we don't need any points, but in them games, but to have him on the bench able to play is huge. And you know, we all know what Trippier is like. I don't think he talked about that too much, but even Federico Fernandez being back, there's just another option in defence who have been very good, but there's just another option there. And I think that these few days in Dubai is just going to be really good to get the whole squad just fit again, get them rested. As Miles says, you know, we had Joe Linton, Joe Willock, Shelby all missing various games over the last couple of weeks. So even just to get them back fully fit, ready for that Tottenham game, I think it's going to be a massive few days.
Yeah, Miles, there's been reports this week, potential return dates for the likes of Kieran Trippier, Callum Wilson. Just as far as you understand, how far away are those players and when could we potentially see them back in action?
Well, it was interesting. Again, Eddie Howe speaking to Dubai, he spoke about being cautious with the two players, which is, you know, quite right, which is understandable. But he also spoke about Trippier being available pretty soon. We'd all did the maths when he was injured. We knew it was at least an eight week injury. So we knew next month was the kind of time when we could see him back. So I don't necessarily think that's unrealistic. The Norwich game's been mentioned, then there's the following week's game. So all being well, touch wood. You know, we'll see both back in contention back in the next month.
Yeah, and another player who's back in contention now after a period on the sidelines, Alan Saint-Maximin. He's out there in Dubai. Eddie Howe said he trained just 2 days over a four-week period, and in that time he came off the bench three times against Brighton, Chelsea and Everton. Didn't have a great deal of impact in either of those games, and he was actually criticised for giving the ball away in the build-up to Everton's winner. But it's now approaching almost 2 months since his last start against Aston Villa back in February. What are your thoughts on the situation with him, and do you expect him to be back in the side for the Tottenham game, man?
Well, I think this break's perfect for him because, as Howe said, he's not really had a proper run of training sessions when he came back from injury. It's been kind of fits and starts and playing, you know, coming off the bench in games, which is not ideal for him. Should he go back in the starting? That's a big question mark. We'll see how he comes through this week. But obviously some criticism has been harsh of him, but equally it was quite telling. He couldn't expect to come straight back into that team. The team's functioned, you know, quite well without him in that time. And it's up to him now to respond to that, to the competition, the increased competition, the performances while he was away, you know, unavailable with that injury, and force his way back into that team. I personally love to see him in the starting 11, but no one player is bigger than this team. And it'll be interesting to see what team he selects at Tottenham. Certainly, of anyone, he's the one player that can make something happen out of nothing. But what you do, you know, football's about what you do without the ball as much as what you do with the ball. And that's an area which we saw every player do so well during his absence. So it's an interesting one. We'll all be looking closely to see how this works out when they do get back.
Yeah, and Alan Saint-Maximin, he's been more involved in more goals for Newcastle United than any player this season. And he sort of hit back at some of his critics, saying people have short memories, posted a picture on Instagram saying that. And Joe, do you understand the criticism that's coming his way, or do you think it's a bit wide of the mark?
I think it's wide of the mark, but I do think that he hasn't lived up to expectations. But I think that's probably because the expectations on him are probably a lot higher than the rest of the team. I think that everyone assumes or expects when he plays to create a bit of magic once or twice in a game, never mind, you know, once every few games. So I think that his performances have been subpar. That's probably not, well, it's definitely not been helped with his injury. You need Saint-Maximin fully fit to have a real impact on the game. And I just like to see him get back being fully fit, because the last few games have shown that when he's not 100%, he can't produce that kind of magic, and he's sort of not useless, but the system doesn't suit him. As you say, he doesn't do a lot defensively, which I suppose is probably to his benefit. He does then do a lot going forward, but I think that he has shown that he has been poor the last few games. So I'd like to see him just get back fully fit. But again, they've got the luxury, because of this great run they've had, that they don't need him straight back in that team for the Tottenham game if he's not 100% fit. They can afford to keep him on the bench. Murphy and Fraser have shown that they're okay replacements. So I think I would hold off until he's fully fit.
Yeah, he is one player who, if fully fit, when fully fit, he is a real asset to Newcastle, like you say, with his pace, his dribbling, probably in terms of ball carrying, statistically the best in the Premier League. So could be a real asset to Newcastle. Just one of those things. And like you say, the defensive side of the game, I agree with to an extent, but I think he has shown a bit of improvement in that regard in recent weeks. I remember the Leeds game a couple of months ago. I thought defensively, probably one of his best performances. And hopefully we can see more of that from him going forward, and he can become more of a complete winger at Newcastle, because he's got the attributes to do that. He's just turned 25, I think it is, as well. So hopefully we see him back in action, firing sooner rather than later. But moving on, we've had some good news, so to speak, this in recent weeks. Shearer's Bar returning to St James's Park, bit of a rebrand of Nine Bar. These little things that the little changes the owners are making that I guess have a big impact on the fan base and easy wins, really. Miles, what are your thoughts on Shearer's Bar coming back, and what sort of improvements, whether it be short-term or long-term, can we expect at the club behind the scenes of this sort of nature?
As you said, this is an easy win. It's not going to make any material change to the stadium as such, but it's an easy win. It's nice to see, you know, players like Alan Shearer, club legends, back involved, back having a relationship with the club. I've not been in for a pint yet. I'm sure I will do. Maybe we should have a sports desk night out there. But I'm certainly pleased. It's a small step. But in terms of the bigger picture, I know they're looking at, I was told they're looking at every option in terms of expanding the stadium. There's already plans in place to start upgrading some of the internal areas, the suites, these kind of areas. We've all seen the pictures. We don't get into all these different areas of the stadium, but we've seen online there's bits of that stadium that haven't been changed since it was expanded. Or indeed, some areas were built in under the previous, back going to Freddie Shepherd's time as chairman. Mm. So it's kind of heartening speaking to people high up at the club that they are looking at a lot of detail about what they can do in terms of improving the existing areas and in terms of expanding it. Obviously, the big issue in terms of expansion is Strawberry Place, which was sold by Mike Ashley for quite a modest profit, really, in terms of in Premier League terms. We've seen other clubs go out of their way to buy up land around their stadiums with a view to the future. Yet this fundamentally important piece of land was sold for quite a small profit, really. That angered and upset all of us at the time. Importantly, though, that land, the work hasn't started on that land. There's buildings around it, but those buildings aren't going up yet. So there's maybe an opportunity there. That obviously the owners are fully aware of the situation regarding that land. So we'll have to just see how that develops. So we'd all love to see an expanded St James's Park. Expanding that end would be expensive. That was kind of seen as prohibitive some time ago, though there were plans drawn up when Freddie Shepherd was chairman. But if the stadium's going to get to 60,000 or more, it's hard to see any other way but to extending the Gallagher end of the stadium. In terms of the training ground, I think we'll see a short-term upgrade and improvements at the existing site. Long-term, medium to long-term, the goal will be a new facility. Most likely, I would say, at a new site. Though again, these are things that have been discussed now. I don't think there's any firm decisions. So it's exciting times. We've seen, you know, I wrote something today about the club's plans for previous plans for a new training ground. They were November 2013 with pledges to have them built by 2016. We didn't see a brick laid. They were mothballed essentially, and have gathered dust ever since. So to see a club with the kind of ambition we've seen elsewhere, look at Leicester's training ground, look at Brighton's training ground, look at what Manchester City have done, Liverpool have done. The facilities aren't really fit for purpose these days. There aren't the kind of facilities that other clubs of a similar stature have. So the sooner we can hopefully see the club moving towards new and improved facilities, the better.
Yeah, and reading between the lines in Eddie Howe's interview he gave earlier today, obviously the training at state-of-the-art facilities in Dubai, he's just saying you want to expose your players to this state-of-the-art stuff, and if you really want to push them physically, you need the highest level of recovery equipment, and they're utilising that at the moment. And Joe, how important is that in terms of the long-term project at Newcastle to really almost disregard the current training ground and build a new state-of-the-art one from the ground up, so to speak?
Yeah, it's just nice to have a fresh start. It felt like that in October with the takeover, and then it felt like that ever since, really. There seems to be just something else that's happened, which it's just got rid of the last 16 years of Mike Ashley's ownership. It just feels, and that's what they need to do. They need to just keep doing, as you said, these little wins in the short term that they can do now, because as you say, the training ground stadium is going to take a long time. But it is important. The training ground isn't up to scratch. You know, it's probably, I would say, at least 2 decades out of, you know, out of that. So, but yeah, so it's, they need to start again, but they're doing it. And it's, as Miles said, it's really exciting to have an ambitious club and one that are actually putting these, that are probably going to put these plans into action, or you'd like to think so anyway.
Yeah, Newcastle, like I keep saying, not in action this weekend, international period, international break. England named their squad last week. No Newcastle players in the squad, which hardly a surprise based on what we've been used to in recent years. But no Matt Target and Dan Burn, based on the form they've been in as English defenders at the moment in the Premier League. Do you think... I'll start with you, Miles. Do you think they've been hard done by not to be in the squad?
Well, on form, you'd certainly say, you know, not just for Newcastle United, but for Brighton as well. You would certainly say Dan Burn would be in the conversation, or should be in the conversation, in terms of centre-halves playing for England. But the one thing I would say, he's never been part of this England setup, and it's, what we know is that you've got a big advantage if you've come through that setup. We don't see too many players coming in their late 20s into that England setup if you've not been part of it. Dan Burns had to do it the hard way. As we know, he was let go by Newcastle at a young age, went away non-league football, worked his way up through the divisions. And much as I would love to see him involved in England, I don't really see him getting involved or getting that call. Though I would like to be proved wrong. Matt Target, maybe he'll be more likely, but certainly both players have been playing very well. Matt Target, I think, is quietly impressed us all, really. Not unfussy, has got on with the job. He's committed in the tackle, and he's also been, you know, a good option in possession in the final third of the pitch, and, you know, even set pieces.
Yeah, and Joe, did you expect any call-ups when Gareth Southgate announced his squad last week from the Newcastle?
I think Burn was always the one. I think we discussed it last week where we sort of said, does Tyrone Mings offer more than Dan Burn? And I don't think we were too sure on that. But I think what's clear is Gareth Southgate has a core of players that he likes. He brings players that they've got good characters. So I'm not having to go Dan Burn's character because I imagine he's probably been a big boost. But I think Southgate knows players like Mings, Cody, and them types of players, and I think he trusts them, so you can't really argue with that. Obviously, I do think Kieran Trippier probably would have been called up had he obviously been fit, and he's probably one of them characters which Southgate will rely on, especially going into the future with the World Cup on the horizon. But yeah, I was a bit you know, I fell for Dan Burn because I think he's, I don't know how much more he can do in Newcastle to get himself in that team. But yeah, so I think Burn and Target probably a bit unlucky. I think they probably, if they were performing at a bigger team, they might have got in, but it's not a shock to not see them in.
Yeah, the way Gareth Southgate operates, players like Tyrone Mings, Harry Maguire, even Jordan Pickford could be in shocking form for the clubs, as in Harry Maguire's case probably is true, but they've served England right, and ultimately this is the most successful period we've seen from England since they won the World Cup, so you can't argue too much, but it would be nice to see Newcastle have some international recognition from an England point of view, because we haven't seen a Newcastle player play for England, I think, since Andros Townsend in 2016. And even then, Newcastle had already been relegated at that point. I don't think he even played a game after that. So you'd even have to go back to Andy Carroll in 2010, where you've got an active Newcastle player playing for England. So, Miles, do you think we'll ever get back to the stage where Newcastle recognition on the England stage becomes a regular thing once again, given the investment and transfers you expect to come into the club in the coming years?
Well, I think Kieran Trippier is the example, isn't it? They've signed a player who played at the Euros, played for England, and probably one of the first names on Gareth Southgate's team sheet. We've obviously spoken about Burn and Target players we think should be in the conversation at England level, but Trippier has been in that squad for a long, long time, and will stay in that squad for, you'd imagine, some time to come. So let's hopefully he comes back from injury. He's an example of the direction the club's going. They've bought an established England international. He's the first. You'd imagine if the club stays up and the plans we're going to see formulated continue or put into place, then we'll see many more.
Yeah, and Joe, another one, I guess, being called up by England before, Callum Wilson, out injured at the moment. No surprise to see him not in the squad or anything like that. But is he one who could potentially be in with an outside chance of being in contention for the World Cup? Should he hit the ground running with Newcastle next season?
I think if Newcastle, you know, assume they stay in the Premier League and they have a similar run of form that they've just had now that they do, you know, before November, before the break, then I think a lot of Newcastle players, you know, got to be in the question, because they'll be given Gareth Southgate no choice. You can't ignore Newcastle, especially if they're up, you know, in the top half of the Premier League. I'd like to say, I've always thought Callum Wilson is a good tournament player. You feel like he's someone you can put on. He doesn't necessarily have to start, but you can put him on for 10, 15 minutes and you think he's always potentially going to get your goal. You know, he's got the knack of being in the right position. Defenders don't like to play against him. And I always compare him a bit with Ollie Watkins, I think. He's the sort of one where you think, is it going to be Wilson or Watkins that are, you know, the sort of third or fourth choice striker? So I would have Watkins, but Wilson, but obviously I am a bit biased.
Yeah, and I guess we'll call it there. Thanks as always, guys, for joining us on the Mouth of the Time podcast. And no action for Newcastle, but we'll be keeping busy over at the Shields Gazette, and you can stay up to date with all the Newcastle United news and coverage over at the Shields Gazette or by following Miles Stauffer, Joe Buckle, myself, Dom Scott on Twitter. You can also subscribe to the Shields Gazette for unlimited ad-light access to all of our Newcastle United coverage. Just head over to shieldsgazette.com/subscriptions for more information on that. But for now, Miles, Joe, been a pleasure as always. Thank you, everyone, for listening to the Mouth of the Time podcast. Cheers.